Hi, I'm Joe, and I'm here with Lily and our teacher, Mrs. Fenn, for another episode of The Walking Classroom.
Thanks for joining us. It's great to be back. Hey, Joseph, any idea what the busiest airport in the United States was in 2010?
It has to be the JFK Airport in New York City.
That's a reasonable guess, but New York isn't even in the top five.
Really? How about Chicago or Los Angeles?
Close. Those are the second and third busiest, but Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport in Atlanta is number one. Almost 90 million total passengers in 1 year. 90 million!
That's almost a third of the entire population of the United States. Are you getting ready to take a trip?
No, I've been doing research for our podcast today on Leonardo da Vinci, and I just started thinking about how air travel has grown since his design of the flying machine over 500 years ago.
Great intro, Lily. Yeah, the Wright brothers didn't master flight until 1903, although da Vinci's research and designs definitely paved the way for understanding powered flight. Should we go ahead and talk about da Vinci's flying machine now, or start at the beginning of his life?
Let's cover da Vinci's life in chronological order, starting with his birth in 1452, April 15th to be exact.
Hey, slow down for 1 minute. You guys have some great information, but you just sort of jumped right in. How about something like, "Welcome, walkers. This edition of the Walking Classroom podcast is on the life and legacy of Leonardo da Vinci, a true Renaissance man. Scientist, inventor, artist, he covered a lot of ground. Da Vinci made tremendous and lasting contributions to science and art. We'll spend our time together today talking about those achievements." How about something like that?
Right. The best way to start a presentation is to let your listeners know what to expect and how to get the most out of it. Okay, Mrs. Fenn, what you said.
This is going to be a lot of fun. Remember to keep one ear uncovered so you can hear your classmates and teacher. And keep up a quick pace. No dragging those feet.
Not only do we want you walkers to learn more about da Vinci, we're aiming to increase your heart rate.
You've been sitting in class for a while, and your heart rate when you are seated is called the resting heart rate. That means all your body is doing is breathing and digesting, no strenuous exercise. For adults, that usually means about 60 to 80 heartbeats per minute. Young adults like you are usually between 60 and 100 heartbeats per minute. Our goal by walking is to get your heart to beat more times per minute over the next 15 minutes or so. As you can imagine, this is called the active heart rate. And the more strenuous the exercise, the faster your heart needs to pump so it can deliver oxygen-rich blood to your muscles to keep the muscles going. Therefore, the higher the active heart rate.
It's good to increase our heart rate at some points during the day with exercise. This helps to increase blood flow and oxygen all through your body and has all-around positive effects. So let's move.
Okay, back to April 15th, 1452. The Renaissance period was in full swing by the time da Vinci was born. And as a reminder to all of you listeners out there who may have listened to our podcast on Renaissance art and artists, the Renaissance was a period of renewal and rebirth. In fact, Renaissance actually means rebirth. People really got excited about learning, and they began thirsting after knowledge. This type of environment, without a doubt, nurtured da Vinci's curious nature and allowed him to thrive as a man of deep and diverse knowledge and interests.
You know, Lily, many people believe that the Renaissance started in Florence, Italy. So Leonardo was lucky to be born in a tiny village outside of Florence called Vinci.
Hence da Vinci. Of Vinci. Leonard of Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci.
You got it. I would be Joe de Chapel Hill. Anyway, da Vinci was born to a peasant mother and a wealthy father, who were not married at the time of his birth, and never did get married. Da Vinci lived with his mother for the first couple years of his life, and then his father took over custody. His father lived in Tuscany, which is a part of Italy, on a grand estate in the Tuscan countryside. So not only did Da Vinci have the opportunity to explore nature, he also had access to books in his father's library.
Not everyone of Da Vinci's day was literate. Actually, not many folks could read or write at all. Because of his father's wealth, da Vinci was taught to read and write and to use an abacus for math practice by the local priest in Vinci. This was the only formal education he ever received, which is phenomenal when you know about his extraordinary inventions and achievements. The majority of his knowledge was the result of exploring and studying nature on his own.
Let's talk about his artistic training.
Okay. Well, Vinci, Italy, had a long tradition of painting, and Leonardo was exposed to this tradition at a young age. He started off as an apprentice, or someone who basically works as an assistant and learns the skill or trade from an experienced master. I'll back up a bit more. As a boy, Da Vinci kept all of his drawings in notebooks, which his father often reviewed. One day, without Da Vinci knowing, his father took several of his finest drawings to Verrocchio's workshop in Florence. Verrocchio knew on the spot that Da Vinci would become one of the world's great artists and immediately accepted him as a discepolo.
I'm going to guess discepolo means apprentice.
Exactly.
I know you walkers can't see this, but the word discepolo looks a lot like the word disciple, which means follower.
Sounds like it too. Discepolo, disciple. Okay, back to Da Vinci's apprenticeship with Verrocchio.
It was typical for young men, 11 or 12 years old, to learn a trade. Because Leonardo was considered an illegitimate child, he was forbidden from entering many professions. Children whose parents were not married were not allowed to enter university or become doctors or lawyers. But given Da Vinci's innate artistic abilities, it was evident to his father that he should become an artist. Artistry was a guild that would accept someone of Da Vinci's background.
I don't know what innate artistic abilities are. Is that a special kind of painting, like Impressionism or something?
No, sorry about the confusion. Innate means that you're born with something, so I wanted to convey that Leonardo was born with artistic abilities.
Got it. Thanks.
So because of his innate artistic abilities, at the age of 15, Da Vinci's father allowed him to apprentice at the workshop of acclaimed painter Andres del Verrocchio in Florence. Remember that a lot of historians think that the Renaissance actually started in Florence? Well, Florence is only about 16 miles from Vinci, and it was a wonderland of intellectual excitement and stimulation for a young Da Vinci.
Yes, Verrocchio was the most famous and well-respected sculptor of the time in Florence. He recognized almost immediately that Da Vinci was special. Da Vinci is credited with creating a perspective technique called sfumato. Renaissance artists discovered how to make parts of the subjects of their paintings appear slightly out of focus, as if the subjects and the paintings were three-dimensional, which gave paintings an entirely new look. This made the objects and people in paintings seem much more realistic.
Exactly. While he was in Florence, Da Vinci began painting the Mona Lisa, which is still considered to be the most famous painting in the world. Many think that the technique of sfumato is what makes Da Vinci's masterpiece, the Mona Lisa, so fascinating and mysterious. By blurring sharp lines and certain features, the artist is able to give objects or people in the painting an illusion of depth. The next time you look at the Mona Lisa, pay close attention to her eyes. This is a perfect example of sfumato.
By 1482, Da Vinci was 30 years old and ready to make some money of his own. He left Florence for Milan, which was another very powerful city-state about 150 miles away.
The Duke of Milan, an obviously wealthy and very powerful man, hired Da Vinci to work for him, and he ended up staying in Milan for 17 years.
Da Vinci had a great deal of success during his years in Milan. Not only did he produce magnificent paintings, he excelled as an architect and sculptor.
Even now, in the 21st century, it's difficult for artists to make a living exclusively on their art. At least at first, anyway. The same thing was true in the 1400s and 1500s. Da Vinci and other artists of the time supported themselves by doing architecture, engineering, and other more practical trades.
Yeah, we read that Da Vinci designed military equipment and weaponry, and because Da Vinci was so innovative, his designs really stood out among the hundreds of other drawers and architects in Milan at the time.
Unfortunately, war was a constant part of life in the 1400s and 1500s, and with his talent, Da Vinci quickly won the favor of Milan's nobility. Da Vinci was a pacifist, which means that he was against war or any sort of violence, and he even referred to the weapons he created as beastly machines. Although he strictly opposed war, he was able to make a very nice living designing bridges, missiles, grenades, traps, and even multi-barrel machine guns.
Really? Multi-barrel machine guns in the 1400s?
Oh yeah, I read about that. The gun wasn't as fancy as later versions, but his designs were the first of their kind. It was a 36-barrel cannon, 12 fired at a time, and while those 12 were firing, the crew was loading the next 12. Like we said, Da Vinci's inventions were unlike anything that had been designed before.
Da Vinci had a wonderful understanding of simple machines, and he included lots of gears, cranks, and levers in his inventions. If you ever have a chance, take a look at some of his machinery design, and you'll be amazed at the number of engineering complexities. It's pretty amazing considering that it was nearly 500 years ago.
Before we switch gears, no pun intended.
Good one.
Did you know Da Vinci was left-handed?
Wasn't that a pretty big deal back then?
It was. Left-handedness was rare in the Renaissance period, just like it is now. Only about 10% of the world's population is left-handed. And because left-handedness was infrequent and unable to be explained, people in the Renaissance said that it was the work of the devil. At the first sign of left-handedness, parents would retrain their children to use their right hand so the kids would not be shunned. Da Vinci refused to switch from left to right, and he remained left-hand dominant all his life. Anyway, just a cool little tidbit. Carry on.
So, we've discussed Da Vinci as an inventor and an artist. Now let's talk about Da Vinci the scientist. His innate curiosity and the tremendous amount of time he spent observing nature served him well. He would ask simple questions, then observe nature and apply what he learned to his studies and designs.
That takes us back to the flying machine. After years observing the beauty of birds, Da Vinci began to ask the question, how do birds fly?
A very simple question, although probably a complex answer. A little help here, Miss Fenn?
Well, I'll do my best. I do know that he methodically recorded his observations and analyzed them, which to a great extent helped to uncover the mysteries of flight. How could anything that's heavier than air fly as if it were lighter than air? He reasoned that it must have to do with the wings, of course, since that had been known since the days of ancient Greeks. But the Renaissance was a time when the old questions started being asked again, but in a more scientific way. He was able to see that wings and sails might have something to do with one another. Both were able to turn pressure from air into motion. So he was able to observe and test some handmade models of wings, and observe and test some more. This practice of observation and application was a process he used to approach other areas of science as well.
Right! That's exactly what I was going to say! While we are on Da Vinci and science, we have to talk about his contributions to anatomy.
Totally.
Da Vinci's interest in painting led him to the study of the human body. He wanted to know the form and function of muscles, bones, tendons, and joints so that he could better capture the human form in his artwork.
He first began to understand the human body by hanging out in hospitals and observing doctors as they carried out operations. Eventually, he was ready to carry out dissections on his own.
But without a medical background, and due to the strict rules of the day, it wasn't easy for him to gain access to cadavers, or dead people, who were studied by doctors and scientists. Let's just say Da Vinci made a lot of late-night, secretive trips to morgues by himself.
As you can imagine, the conditions were pretty disgusting. I mean, at least in the 21st century, we have refrigeration and formaldehyde to preserve the bodies. But those luxuries were non-existent in the 16th century Italy. He probably had to work pretty quickly before the bodies decomposed.
Or before he was busted.
You're right. It's gross. Da Vinci's first biographer, Paolo Giovi, wrote in 1520 that Da Vinci learned to dissect the cadavers of criminals under inhuman, disgusting conditions because he wanted to examine and to draw the different deflections and reflections of limbs and their dependence upon the nerves and the joints. That's why he paid attention to the forms of even very small organs, capillaries, and hidden parts of the skeleton.
I'm guessing that means he endured working with decomposing cadavers because he wanted to learn as much as he could about the way the body moved, even though it was gross. Once he knew what the inside of the body looked like and understood how it worked, it would benefit his art.
He paid very close attention to detail, and he used a process in anatomy similar to the one he did with his engineering designs as an inventor. Remember the observation and application approach? Da Vinci observed, tested, and then reviewed when studying and illustrating the human body. So, you can imagine what he would need to do to see exactly how, say, a person's muscles change when their arm moves.
Yuck. But being meticulous paid off. His observations about the average human body and proportions were quite accurate and remain well respected today.
Can you give me an example?
All right. He stated, the span of a man's outstretched arms is equal to his height. This doesn't always apply, but on average, a person's wingspan is a close predictor of height. When we're done with our walk, we'll try it out.
Okay. Now should we leave Milan and cover the later years of Da Vinci's life?
Good idea. So Da Vinci stayed in Milan until 1499, at which time he left to travel around Italy. He worked for a number of people in the last 20 years of his life, including patrons in Florence and Rome, even the Pope.
In the spring of 1503, he took a job of painting a private portrait.
Wasn't that pretty unusual for Da Vinci, to paint a private portrait?
Yeah, it was. But given that he was unemployed at that time and how difficult it was for artists to make a living, the idea of a paycheck probably sounded pretty good.
Are you talking about the Mona Lisa?
Exactly. It is considered Da Vinci's masterpiece and is one of the most famous pieces of art in the world. There has always been a lot of mystery around the painting. What we do know is that Da Vinci used subtle shadowing techniques to create effects never seen before.
For someone who is known as one of the world's greatest painters, he sure doesn't have many completed works to his name. There are only about 6 completed works on record during the 17 years he worked in Milan. One of those was The Last Supper, which was his other painting masterpiece. But still, 6 in 17 years isn't a lot.
Yeah, I agree. But consider his curiosity. Perhaps he was interested in so many things that he just jumped from project to project without ever really completing what he was working on.
Speaking of completing a project, we need to wrap up our podcast for today. A few things Lily and I want to make sure you remember are, Leonardo da Vinci was a man of many talents and made many significant contributions to the world as an artist, scientist, and inventor.
His most notable achievements were in painting, architecture, mechanics, and anatomy.
Many of his achievements were the result of observation of nature and applying what he learned.
And Da Vinci maintained highly detailed notes and illustrations of his innovations, which is why we continue to learn from his life and ideas.
Thanks again for joining us. We really hope you enjoyed the podcast and your elevated heart rate. As always,
happy trails!